insane. If I ever leave this world, hey, I may never leave this world. But if I ever leave this world alive, she says, I'm okay.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 19. No reviews, just analysis. Up this week, two new comics from November 27th, 2013. Hawkeye number 14 and The Max Maximized number 1. As always, we also have your nerd confessions. And in the spirit of the season, we asked you all to share your comics thanks. You done good, kids. And as a show of appreciation for your hard work, we bring you another installment of Grief Counseling. You're welcome. On the couch, Eisner winners DJ Kirkbride and Adam P. Nave. Just as a reminder, we don't do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers from here on out.
Hi, Comics Therapy. This is Cameron Williams Wasgo from Twitter, and I'm actually thankful for Twitter. Over the past year, I've had an amazing time talking with some wonderful people about comics. Sure, a lot of it is bad jokes and the more than occasional uproar about something someone did, didn't do, should have done, or would have got away with if it weren't for those meddling kids. But I've made some great friends there. I feel very lucky, so thanks.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Andrea nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. The theme of the show this week is, what are we thankful for? It's a total cop-out, but we're okay with that. We've talked about some fairly dire death and destruction type stuff over the past several weeks, so why not sit down and get comfortable while we chat about things in comics that got us here in the first place. The characters and series we're most thankful for, the people we love, and yes, Andrea is reading The Walking Dead. Again, I know that's something I'm giving thanks for this week especially.
Hey everybody, this is at Charming Red, the mom who reads comics on Twitter, part of Comicosity's Hangout. I am comics thankful for the fact that we seem to be living through a renaissance of comic books where not only can you enjoy stories, massive, huge superhero crossovers from the big two, but you can also enjoy the emotionally and intellectually stimulating independent books that are getting massive amounts of press just as much as any other books during this time. Everybody have a safe holiday.
In between comic segments, your very own nerd confessions, celebrating the geeky things we all do, say, read, and enjoy. You know the drill. You share them with us, and we'll share them on an upcoming episode of the show. This week's prompt asked listeners to share the same thing we're talking about. What are you most thankful for in all things comics? It's kind of a giant love fest. Tis the season. You can still call, Skype, or email your general confessions at any time. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. And remember, catharsis is cool.
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter at Aaron Myers and Andrea at Andrea Shock. And of course, the show account is at Comics Therapy. So Andrea, how's your week?
Before we talk about me, I want you to share with our listeners how many comics you bought today.
You know, my list was around 30, so I don't really remember. I think it's roughly 30.
Roughly. I think that you probably rounded up a bit, perhaps to 40?
I don't know. Is that possible?
See, the thing about posting your haul picks is that then everybody can see that you blew it. The first week out of the gate, you blew it.
Is it the first week or is this the second week?
Well, you blew it last week anyway.
Oh. So see? I'm just continuing the trend. If anything, right. I'm sticking to my guns.
Yeah, I was going to give you a restart this week. You know, last week you were still in the adjustment, like, transition phase. This week was when you were going to hunker down and, like, really follow these new rules of yours. And yet, you didn't.
I think I kind of did.
Really?
No.
So, any particular ones that you like, didn't account for in advance? Like, what was the problem?
There's just too many good books this week.
Okay.
I mean, I had stuff on my cut list, and then I'm sitting there, in front of the books, and it's like, well, I want to read that, or I want to find out what happens with this, or, you know, there's only a couple more of this series left. Like, why stop now?
So, is it possible that you're starting to see my perspective that picking an arbitrary number is not the right way to go about doing this, and that it has to be something a little bit more, I don't know, taking into consideration the stories themselves?
But don't, I think I already do that. That's the problem.
Okay.
I just like a lot of series for different reasons. Like, people ask me this week, like, hey, you know, do you read everything you get, or do you just buy things just to have them? And really, on Wednesdays, besides, like, back issues, just to fill in things, or, you know, impulse buys, that sort of stuff, I basically make an effort, effort's the wrong word, like, I buy stuff I want to read.
So 30 was arbitrary, and 30 isn't really going to work out.
No, but I think by setting 30 as a target, it makes me then have to evaluate how much I like it. If
okay.
that makes sense. Like, obviously some books are better than others. Like, people will make fun of me because I tweet out, like, oh, this is great, or oh, this was great. Like, everything can't be great. I think I'm getting tongue-tied, but...
You just love comics so much you can't even articulate
it. I love it. And if I'm going to talk about it, and I like it, and I think it's something other people will like for one reason or another, I'm just not that guy, at least online, to be able, because you can't articulate it properly to say, like, oh, you know, this or this could be better, that sort of thing. You just don't have the characters to make a well thought out review. And I don't really want to review things that way. I want to just talk about things I really liked reading.
And you just like a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you look at it, sure, I bought 40 books. But on the shelf this week, there's 120 books.
Okay.
Or more. 200, you know, it's a huge week of comics. So,
right.
You know, yes, it's a lot of comics, but it's also not all of the comics.
I really just want you to admit that I was right and you were wrong.
I think we're both right. I don't think you understand
me. Oh, my fucking God.
I think what you're wrong about is you just don't understand me and you haven't taken the time or effort to really get to know me.
What part of you failed to meet your 30 comics a week goal do I not understand?
Because you listened to the words and not the feeling.
Uh-huh. Wait, just a second. You are now talking to me about feelings?
Yeah. I'm a very complex person.
That's hilarious.
You know, you think I'm just this cool guy, he's got everything going on, he's got an awesome beard, but there's a lot more going on underneath. I'm not all beard. The beard is on the inside, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's the most frightening thing you've ever said.
Well, it's getting real. But
it
yes,
is.
You're right about 30. I, though, mentally need a number and a target to hit in order mm-hmm. then to evaluate about stuff that maybe I'm not enjoying as much as I was once. Otherwise, I just never drop anything because I go like,
it's the OCD
okay.
part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your OCD, you need the number. It's the same way that you manage the rest of your life. It's kind of bullshit. I just wanted you to admit it. We can move on.
Whatever.
I so rarely get credit from any of you guys for occasionally having insight or correct opinion, as if opinions themselves need to be right as opposed to wrong. That when it happens, and it happens in a public way like this one, just grant me the opportunity to revel in it for a moment.
You were right. I was wrong.
Thank you.
All right.
So, my week. I'm in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking cold here.
Mm-hmm.
There's all this shit on the ground, like
That's
inches of
snow,
it.
That's called snow, right?
Ah, it is called snow. And it's pretty terrible. Yeah. Yeah. But Avi got to play in the snow, so that was fairly delightful for him. He had a really good time. He built a snowman, probably got it out of his system. But it's funny, because as we were arriving on Monday, and so it was like the first adjustment for like climate in California to climate in Western Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just as bratty as I have been about the weather.
Hmm.
Like, all kinds of, well, this is dumb. Why is it? Oh, it's so cold. You know, it's not cold in California. Well, he's already acclimated. He is. But it's nice to be here for family. It's just that the weather is, I'm over it. I'm super over it. I understand that everyone else is whining about it too. And just like add my voice to the crowd. Because snow is stupid and I'm over it.
It is very much of a shock to the system and a shock to your, you know, your emotions. Like East Coast, being a West Coast person, I'm not used to East Coast weather at all and I don't enjoy it.
Well, but you at least grew up on the West Coast. Yeah. I mean, I'm just a brat. Like I haven't even been out there for 2 years.
I grew up at a higher elevation. Like we had snow plenty when I grew up in California, but I grew up in the mountains. I didn't grow up in San Francisco. Okay. So we had plenty of snow. It gets cold, but it's just a different kind of, just a different kind of weather. And this is dumb. We're old people talking about the weather, but it really shapes your personality in a lot of ways too. So it's very hard to adjust.
I have found myself, and I've been here for 3 days now. I'm just grumpier.
I didn't think that was possible.
It is, as a matter of fact. Extra angsty, extra grumpy. This is going to be an amazing show where we give thanks for all the things that we love about comics. And Andrea is super pissed off about everything.
Wonderful. I can't wait to get started.
But, I mean, hey, happy Thanksgiving. It's going to be awesome.
I guess. We're not going to do something huge. My parents were here last month. So we sort of did like a mini Thanksgiving, then they're not going to come up again because they live, 8 hours away. So we're going to do a small just Thanksgiving here. It's also the first night of Hanukkah too, so.
Right.
We'll do that. Right. Daughter's coming over, staying the night, at least for Thanksgiving and Hanukkah. And she's decided since she's not getting any more presents from us, she's going to go to her friend's house for Christmas, which is not a good deal.
I'm super behind. I have one thing for Avi, and it's like his big present. But we tend to, as a family, do Hanukkah much later because we're never in the same place as everybody else, except this year, since it coincides with Thanksgiving. I'm just like woefully unprepared. I mean, there's no explanation for how not ready I am.
What do you mean you do it later than everyone else? Like you don't celebrate it during the time?
We'll do it together. Wait, there's no real rule for this because we've only been away from Pittsburgh for, this is only the second holiday season, but last year we did something like small just in terms of marking the days and we had some friends over and it was lots of fun and I make really amazing latkes and April made brisket and it was just like fun and small and good times. Uh-huh. When we come back in for like Christmas, New Year's time, then we'll do actual gift exchange with the rest of the family. So that's what we have done traditionally. In fact, even when we were in Pittsburgh, we tend to do gifts like amongst the family around New Year's instead.
Yeah.
But this year, since it's like tonight, I'm just hoping that nobody else is prepared. But I got Avi tickets for he and I to see Ben Folds perform with the San Francisco Symphony next May.
Oh, wow.
So I'm pretty fucking stoked about that because I've seen Ben Folds with the Pittsburgh Symphony twice and it's probably the most amazing concert experience that I've ever had.
I mean, that's your gift for your 8-year-old son?
Oh my God, he's obsessed with Ben Folds. I'm raising him right. Yeah, so?
I don't know. Where's the lightsaber or the...
Oh, he'll get that stuff.
Okay.
I mean, he won't get it all. He'll get, like, a couple things. He'll get probably some Legos.
Okay.
I hear boys are into Legos and building shit.
Yes. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't like, here's some new socks, and if you look inside the new socks, here's some concert tickets for 6 months from now.
No. I'm just saying that that's the only thing that I have.
Okay.
So, we'll see.
That makes more sense. I thought it was like some crazy like...
No. Oh my God. What do you think I am?
Here's a blank box. Fill it with hopes and dreams.
And some kale and, Birkenstocks.
Yes.
I'm not that girl. Okay. You should know that by now.
Well, just making sure.
If I put together a gift exchange for people I don't even know, and then I turn around and don't give my own kid presents, that kind of makes me an asshole, Aaron.
Well, I was wrong again.
Yes! Oh, this is going to be the best show ever. I am so thankful.
Although, I do reserve the right to still go back on that. You still may be an asshole, just not in this case.
Do you want to talk about a comic for 90 seconds?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So, if you don't follow the rules, like, we're just going to be done with this.
Yeah, I'm going to follow the rules.
Okay.
Hey, guys. I'm truly thankful for all the new mediums and platforms for which comic book creators can use to springboard their work to us as consumers. I find it amazing that what I think has become a stagnant art has really come through the ringer and is evolving at a very progressive and fast rate. I mean, I can now read comic books on my mobile phone while I'm walking to work, on my lunch break, anywhere. There are comic books being paid for through Kickstarter by people who have never met but share one common love. Comics. There are hundreds of comic book podcasts, yours being one of the best, obviously, which can be devoured and enjoyed. The world is getting smaller and comic book collectors and enthusiasts from two sides of the globe can now share the experience. It's amazing. Thanks for the opportunity to share my love. Ian. Newcastle, England.
Every week, I give Aaron 90 seconds to talk about whatever he wants that we don't have time to discuss more deeply. 90 seconds, one book, one new comic from this week, like that you bought today,
yep.
That was released today for the first time.
Yes.
That we're not analyzing elsewhere.
Nope.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Go.
So I'm going to talk about the previews book this week. Which I consider to be part, a quintessential part of the comics experience and the comic day, especially at the end of the month. So I feel it counts. It's also one of my favorite things at the end of the month to read through. Because I love going through and picking out the stuff I'm going to pre-order and see what's going to come out, you know, in the future. And I know people complain, like, it would be nice just to be able to go to the comic shop and just have whatever you wanted available to you. And not have to pre-order it. But it's just not how it works. And in a way, I really like going through the book, though, and seeing what's coming out, reading the solicitations, kind of making my list of what I want, you know, in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fun to share with people. Like, it's sort of part of my ritual is, like, kind of live tweeting, here's what I'm going to get, here's what I'm interested in, here's what you should check out. And I think other people seem to. I only lose maybe a dozen followers every time I do it.
You provide a valuable service.
Oh, sure. Yeah, people should pay me. So it's a lot of fun. Like, it's Wednesday. Like, it's a very busy week full of comics. I'll read them today. We're recording on Wednesday, so it'll be today and tomorrow. I probably won't finish till tomorrow. But then Friday, I'll go through and kind of pick and tweet out all the books I want to get. So that's all. I just wanted to share that. I think it's a lot of fun.
Well, thank you, Aaron. Thank you so much. That was your buzzer.
Perfect, see?
Yes. It's a technicality that I'm going to let slide. But, dude, next week,
we'll see.
You're on notice. It's got to be a comic that is, like, narrative. Not a previews magazine. Not something that was released years ago. And not a t-shirt. It has to be a new comic. Rules are rules. You can flagrantly disregard them when it comes to how many you buy every week, but it's for the show, man. You gotta take it seriously.
Where we're going, there are no rules.
Uh-huh. That's the second week in a row that we're having a veiled Back to the Future reference, so I suppose I'll let your insolence slide just for that.
Yes. Oh, and one more thing with the previews book, too, is after I'm done with it, I bring it back to the comic book shop and I give it to somebody else there.
Aww.
Yeah. So I pass it forward. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Think if anything's going to get me into heaven, it's passing on the previews book.
Yeah, probably. You want to talk about comics?
Yeah, let's talk about comics.
Like, readable comics? Not a book about comics?
I am most comics thankful for the love for the comics industry that has fostered such a great social media community such as Twitter and Tumblr. I've become friends with a ton of people through these outlets over the year, and the number keeps growing, and for the most part, that is all due to this great industry. Thank you.
Our first comic this week is Hawkeye number 14, written by Matt Fraction and drawn by Annie Wu, with colors by Matt Hollingsworth and lettering by Chris Eliopoulos. David Aja did the cover, as usual, and Hawkeye is published by Marvel Comics. So I picked Hawkeye for my book to give thanks for, because I think everybody knows about my deep love of all things Clint Barton, but honestly, this series is, it's much more than that for me. I want to talk about remaking a character with such heavy history, and doing so while also remaking what it means to be a superhero solo book. Plus, I think Annie Wu is the bee's knees, and so is Kate, so this is a no-brainer for me. But Aaron, why don't you start, because I know you read this too, but I know that you don't have the same emotional connection that I do, unsurprisingly.
Not to Hawkeye. I mean, I like Hawkeye. I have plenty of those solo books too. They're nothing like this book.
Exactly.
So that's fine. You can't really compare them other than it's the same character and name.
Right.
I don't know. Nothing in comics is sacred, really.
Right.
As long as it's done well. That's my opinion.
Right. And we're so forgiving about that, as long as it's done well. I think that's one of the most insightful things you've said, is that we're very willing to accept really significant change as long as it's followed through with really dynamically well done writing and drawing and like the whole package.
Yeah, you can change iconic characters. You could even retcon history as much as you want, as long as the payoff and the execution is done well. Mm-hmm. People get mad when stuff is changed arbitrarily and not done well.
Right.
So, you know, that's fine. Like, I don't mind that there's two Hawkeyes, because they're very different Hawkeyes, and I think it's a good dynamic, and it's fun, fun storytelling. And it doesn't affect anything else either, too. So, like, nothing Kate is doing affects the rest of the Marvel Universe. The one thing I was going to ask, though, is I am becoming more admittedly a continuity, not snob, but I do get a little more anxious when things don't work. Even, you know, you can stretch the boundaries pretty far. But when things are very outside of what's going on in the rest of the universe, like a Marvel universe or a DC universe, that are supposed to be within it, then it bothers me.
Okay, so is Hawkeye bothering you?
Not the story, but the that it's taking place. I mean, it could take place anytime. There's lots of ways to justify it. But I still feel like it's supposed to be taking place currently.
Yeah, I think it has to be. It's presented as such. It's like the filler in between the other bigger storylines.
Yeah, it just doesn't work with things like Young Avengers then.
No. No, it absolutely does not.
Right. So, I mean, I don't want to get stuck on that, and I don't think it matters to a lot of people. I'm just kind of curious, like, if that ever matters to you. And I don't know if we want to get into a whole discussion of continuity, but I think people have been tending to say they just want good stories, continuity doesn't matter, and I think that's kind of a BS argument.
I agree. I think that there's a really important balance that has to be there, because otherwise, thumbing your nose at continuity, that's like the backbone of the entire universe, right? Everything falls apart if there isn't structure. And so you can be flexible. And like I just said, we can be very forgiving. But there are rules.
Oh, no.
There are always rules.
Oh, no. This is what has happened.
Isn't it funny that I'm the one who is, like, such a staunch supporter of rules and rigor, and you are not?
I'm not in certain things, but I am in storytelling.
Right.
And I think it's very important when you're building a universe to stick to that universe, or make it very clear that this is outside of the story.
I think that this book is more successful with that, with Clint, than with Kate.
Yes.
And I think that that is mostly a product of what is happening, or what has been happening with the Young Avengers storyline specifically. And I guess my willingness to suspend disbelief is probably more so with this book than with a lot of other things. I'm not objective about Hawkeye, and I never have claimed to be. And so Kate Bishop kind of falls under that same umbrella of, it's not going to work for a direct application to the larger story, but I'm okay with that. To an extent. If something equally as epic was happening in this book, you know, seemingly to span months of... Well, honestly, what's happening with her right now has a very serious danger of being, like, in direct conflict with Young Avengers, and that will eventually start to bother me. She picks up and she leaves New York and she goes off to the West Coast and has been there for a number of days, will seemingly continue to be there for a number of days. And at a certain point, if you just start doing the math, it doesn't work with the other larger story.
Yeah.
Fraction and Ajo are doing some things with time and with storytelling from the very beginning that are so dramatically different that I think that they might get a pass for a while.
Yeah. I also think that this story is outside of kind of any, like, referencing other stuff. So I can kind of put it into my brain that it could be happening some other time until timelines get compressed too much to where it can't. There's a ton of give in timelines and what can be happening. It's more when, like, storylines contradict each other.
Mm-hmm.
That I really don't start to like than big two books.
Agreed.
And I think Marvel's done a really good job of not doing that too much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I buy a ton of Marvel books now. But yes. Okay, so anyway, back to Hawkeye.
Back to Hawkeye.
And this story in particular, like, I really like what Kate's doing. She's learning to be her own person, her own adult, separate from family and safety nets.
Yeah. Yeah, she's much less... Well, I guess in a way, just like Clint is a little bit less functional in the main storyline. Sorry, Kate, but I'm going to continue to call Clint's stories in this title the main story. But, you know, she is less of a leader and less... She just has her shit together less in this than in other iterations of her character. And same with Clint. And so on the one hand, the storylines are very entertaining. But on the other, they don't necessarily paint either Clint or Kate in the best light. Like, bumbling comes to mind. I mean, come on. She's a really smart girl. And there are some things that she has done in this book especially that are kind of stupid. I mean, even being a teenager, even being, what, 18, 19 years old, in comparison to the way that she's stepped up as a leader in other stories.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, is like the one problem I have with Hawkeye as a whole, is that as endearing as it is to see Clint Barton be, like, kind of a fuck up and deal with the consequences of his actions in a sort of sad, angsty way, that is a significant departure from the kind of, like, brash know-it-all attitude that he's had before, which I think is ultimately, like, a really interesting character development. But every once in a while, I'm like, really? Really? He doesn't know how to spell, so he's calling his ex-wife. Really, Kate, you don't know that you have too many groceries in your bag to buy for $5? Come on.
Right, yeah.
But it's funny. It always makes me smile. It, you know, it's a lovely book aesthetically, and that also means a lot. But, I mean, really, he has been my favorite character for so long that I am always going to read a story with Hawkeye in it. I read all of the Ultimates Hawkeye stories. It's really? Gonna be, wow. I know, right?
Which is a very different Hawkeye.
Very, very different character.
Yeah.
But still, I appreciated I appreciated the difference just because there were some through lines that were similar, but some of the changes were so dramatic as to be, like, unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what's going on here, and I'm not claiming that it is. But I will always have that emotional link back to the character, because it was like he made me laugh when I was a kid. The attitude that he had, especially towards Cap in, like, the old Avengers books of the, like, 80s and and 90s. I thought that attitude was really appealing and attractive in a non-creepy way. So when he has the chance to do that in this new story and not look like a complete fool, then I'm like, yeah, that's Hawkeye.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's valid. I will allow you these indulgences.
Thanks.
Will you allow me my indulgence and we can talk about our next book?
I will. I totally approve of this choice. I wouldn't even consider this an indulgence. I fully support it.
Great. Well, let's talk about it.
Greetings, comic therapists. This is Roderick Ruth, at Roderick Ruth on Twitter. And my nerd confession this week is that I am thankful for all the people that I've met in real life, all the people I've met from Twitter, to help support and share my comic book hobby and passion with over the years. It's been a great little community we've formed, and it really helps with the excitement and overall enjoyment of, you know, just going to the comic book shop every Wednesday or getting some new delivery of some graphic novel in the mail or just helping each other out with digital codes and whatnot. I just love it. It's so much fun. I want to thank you guys. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Hanukkah. Peace.
Our second book is The Max Maximized, number one, written by Sam Keith and William Messner Loebs, with artwork by Sam Keith. Additional inks by Jim Sinclair, coloring by Rhonda Pattison, and lettering by Mike Heisler?
Let's try Heisler.
Heisler, that works.
Okay.
The Max Maximized is published by IDW, and yes, this is a remastered re-release of the series originally published by Image Comics. So, I don't know who wouldn't know about the Max, right? But
right.
And how do you describe the Max other than he's an insane man in one world and a hero of the Outback in another, fighting his arch nemesis in both? And
fair enough. Why'd you pick it?
So why did I pick it?
Yeah.
Because it's one of my favorite series, probably, you know, top 10.
Okay.
And not objectively, probably not, but I think other people share that feeling too.
Sure.
It's, you know, when I was a teenager and Image First Wave came out, it was the first book that I read ever that was changing. Like, it changed things for me. Like, I didn't really realize or have exposure to books that could be different than, like, Youngblood or Superman or Spider-Man, mm-hmm. you know, things that were pretty traditional superhero stuff, even if they were just Image books. Like, even Spawn was different, but it wasn't that different.
Right.
But the Max, it was the first one I had exposure to that was, like, totally out in its own kind of realm, like breaking molds.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why I picked it. Like, I have a lot of tie to it. Like, I recently just collected all the issues before they announced that they were going to remaster it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of hard to find after, like, issue 25, because that's when the series takes a kind of a big change.
Right.
And the print level went down a lot. But it was something I had to have because I had such an emotional tie to it. Like, my friend and I, in high school, we had a zine that we called The Laughing Cow. And we took out an ad, and I'd have to look now. It's like issue 9. It's like somewhere in between issue 9 and 13. I forget which one it's
Oh, my God. I definitely still have those. So
yeah, I mean,
when I get back home, I'm going
to
look.
You should be able to find it. It's somewhere in the back matter with I think it was send a self-address stamped envelope to my friend's address, and we mailed them back a copy of our zine.
Did people contact you?
Yeah, I think we had like a couple dozen people.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine, and we were like, 14, 15 at the time, something like that.
That's adorable.
Yeah. So I just have a lot of emotional tie to this, and I think the story still holds up. It doesn't feel dated to me, but I'm kind of curious for somebody who would be just reading this, how they would feel about it.
Yeah, I have no idea, because I have a very similar connection to it, minus the zine, and obviously, well, I don't know, did you reread it when you were collecting it?
I reread, like, the first 10 or so.
Okay. Because I haven't read it since it came out. And I guess when you were talking about it a couple of weeks, months, I have no sense of time anymore. But when you were collecting those last couple from the run and we chatted about it, I had this like desire to go back and reread it, and I didn't get around to it. So this issue was the first one that I have read in, what is that, like 20 years?
Yeah, and I think that's the reason they're doing it. It's like a 20-year remaster.
Right. So I think it's not dated in the slightest bit. I thought it was lovely. And
do you think it still works for like a 16-year-old kid these days?
I don't know. I'll tell you what. When I was reading it at the time, there is no way in hell that I understood like a significant portion of the layers in terms of like character development and even kind of the fantasy structure between the real world and constructed world. There's so much subtlety there, and then there's so much like in your face stuff, and I'm sure that the in your face stuff I was all over, but the subtle stuff that's much more sophisticated and sad, I was likely not as privy to. So we'll see, because I haven't read any more. I just read this first one. And like I said, I thought it was fun. And like, it felt so familiar without it being, like, I don't remember how the story progresses in terms of pacing. Mm-hmm. So it felt comfortable without being like too overexposed. But I, even knowing kind of where the end goal is, I'm going to really enjoy getting there.
I think this is also the one, like, I look at them and I always kind of drool over them, but the artist edition books.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one I've actually pre-ordered. Like, I don't think, it hasn't even been, it was announced, but it isn't in the previews book yet. But right. They have announced that they will at some point put out a Max artist edition. So right. I already have it on order with the local store. Just when that's available, order it for me.
Really? It's the only one?
Yeah, I don't have any of the others. I've looked at buying some of them. They're really expensive, and it's like I always look at them after I've picked up all my books for the week, and I'm like, I don't have the money for it. But
only gotten 30 instead of 40.
Yeah, maybe, but that's no fun.
I think it's interesting that this book was for both of us the first one. I mean, I think it sounds like you're saying it's the first one that was kind of outside of the box.
Yes.
It was not a predictable, like, superhero title, or even not exclusively superhero, but just in the non-linear way that the story is told, and the like, what is real and what is not real, and whose fantasy are we in, and so on and so forth. So I think it's kind of telling, and I guess it makes sense given that we're about the same age, that this was the first comic that kind of did that for both of us. So it's kind of cool. Look, we're agreeing, Aaron.
Yeah, we're both right. Well, do you want to talk about something else we both love?
I'm not sure that that's the right way to frame this next segment.
Oh, I think it is.
Okay, hit me.
Let's talk about The Walking Dead.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this is Reese Marino, color assist on Amelia Cole, calling in his nerd confession for Comics Therapy. Basically, I wanted to take a moment to say thank you to all the people involved in making comic books. There are plenty of characters in comics that I can go through and list that I'll tell you that I love, you love, and I'm sure tons of other people love. But what I want to talk about are the people behind the scenes, like the writers, the artist, the colorist, the inker, the letterer, the editor, the publisher, the marketing people, the podcasters that talk about it, the people who spend time reviewing the comics. Those are the people that I want to thank for comics, because honestly, without the community of comics, comics wouldn't be what they are. They wouldn't provide us with the kind of entertainment and joy that we get from reading them week in and week out. So thank you to every single one of you who spends their time putting their all into comic books in one form or another. I truly appreciate it. I have from the beginning, and I will until the day I die. Have a happy Thanksgiving. And take care.
So finally, this is what you've all been waiting for. It's another installment of Grief Counseling. If you've never heard the segment before, let me explain. Last summer, despite swearing she would never do so, Andrea started reading The Walking Dead for the first time for the show. She'd read a volume a week, and she talked about it, and it was pretty much my favorite thing ever, while simultaneously dredging up all her deepest fears. So after volume 8, she cracked and I let her take a break. We did volume 9 for the Halloween show, and we're back again this week with volume 10 for the Thanksgiving show, because nothing says heartwarming family time like zombies. Andrea, I know I speak for all of us when I say I am thankful for you being willing to continue torturing yourself like this.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. And you know what? You're welcome for me allowing you to continue reading this when you were going to let yourself drop it.
You are not the reason why I'm still reading this.
I think in your heart I am.
No, not at all. Mm. If it was up to me, I'd be done. If it was up to you, I would have never stopped. And instead, I heard a voice of reason that was somewhere in between that spoke to the storytelling and the appeal that could possibly be garnered by sticking it out.
Hmm. Well, tell me about this volume, because I don't remember what happens in it.
Well, we are en route to Washington, D.C. Rick and Carl and Michon, Maggie and Glenn, Andrea and... oh, shoot. Who's her boy?
I don't remember.
Ah, it doesn't matter. They're probably all dead in all of the ones that you guys are reading now anyway.
Probably.
I actually don't remember, and I should have taken note of it. I don't remember what issues this collects, but it's probably in the early 50s. I guess probably in the early 60s, since volume 8 ends with number 48. So, yeah, they've hooked up with some other people, one of whom works for the government, or, like, ostensibly claims to be, and they're off to kind of report back what they see kind of in the trenches, and they're heading to D.C. This collection splits off Rick, Carl, and Abraham, who's one of the... he's, like, the muscle of this new group that they're with. And they head north to Rick's town to kind of collect, I guess, like, all of the stuff, all of the supplies from the police station that Rick used to work at. And everybody else is hanging back and waiting for them to return before they head further east. So anytime the groups splinter like that, anytime there's separation, it makes me really nervous, because obviously something bad is going to happen to one, or probably both, given this title. And then when they reconnect again, they will be dealing with the aftermath of the bad.
Right.
Surprise. So there were two big, horrible things that happened to Rick and Carl and Abraham on their way to the police station. They get jumped by some, like, punks on a highway, and it looks really bad for a while. There's some sort of disgusting implications in terms of Carl's safety and predators that I was really uncomfortable with, and you know, a fairly significant chance that everybody would be dead, but of course, that's not what happened, and instead, we have Rick once again being like a total animal, killing a guy with his bare hand, in the name of protecting his son. And then there's a very extensive kind of cathartic reflection between Rick and Abraham, and then eventually Carl, which is even sadder, about all of these disgusting, horrible, depraved things that they have done since the zombies came in the name of survival. So that was rough. So then they get there, they get all the stuff, everything's fine, or as fine as it can be, and they head back, and they run into one of the hordes, or herds, I can't remember what they call them, just a, like, metric fuckton of zombies, and since everybody probably knows that my original fear with this book was, in fact, the zombies, and not how disgusting we can all be as humans, that still bothers me. I sent you a picture.
Yes.
Of the car coming over the hill, and there's just, like, thousands of zombies, and everything is terrible. And that, I gasped out loud. Like, maybe there was a little bit of a shriek, because that that visual is still, I still have that fear. It's not like this book has allowed me to work through my fear of zombies. I'm just also afraid of people now, so thanks.
Well, I mean, if anything, that's what the book kind of teaches you about.
Oh, Jesus. It's like, just be afraid of everything. Awesome.
Well, once society collapses, like, what keeps things in check?
Well, I don't know. It's very deep, Aaron. What keeps things in check now?
Laws and rules and, a penal system and justice and that sort of thing.
Okay. So when you don't have that, I guess, in the absence of structure, everything goes to hell.
Yeah, chaos.
Yeah. It turns out, despite the fact that you guys all think I'm a spaz, I do not do well with chaos. I don't.
Right, because you only do well with chaos that you generate. You want to be the tornado. You don't want to be the house swept up in it.
I don't want to be the tornado. I try really hard to not be a complete mess. I do.
Well, even a tornado has some order to it.
Oh, that's very poetic.
Thank you.
So anyway, Maggie tries to kill herself. I should have mentioned that sooner. So that was fairly dire and awful and unexpected in terms of the way that individual characters are still kind of dealing with the consequences. There's a yucky interaction with Rick and I can't remember who Morgan was. Was he a colleague or was he a neighbor? We met him and his son in like the very first issue or first couple of issues.
Yeah, I think he was just lived in the town and they had taken refuge at the sheriff station.
Or like in a house nearby.
Maybe,
or something,
something like that. Yeah, I mean,
it's been a
long time, so I forget.
Sure. And his son is a zombie and it's like kind of bad news bears because he's been apparently killing people and feeding them to his son. That's not fucked up at all. So this is, in terms of the story progression, there's like not a tremendous amount of development or I guess maybe like physical movement. They are, as a group, not any closer to DC. But I think that moment, that shared moment with Rick and Abraham and Carl was really important because they all just kind of spilled their guts about these like horrible, horrible actions and kind of absolved themselves of the guilt a little bit because it was all in the name of survival. Like, it's okay to be an animal as long as you're protecting the other animals that are important to you. And, like, that's the difference between them and everybody else who's been turned into a zombie. So, okay. Okay, Rick, I see what you did there. But it's not necessarily fun to watch or, you know, read, as it were. And then, of course, as they arrive back to the rest of the camp, we learn that they have very conveniently led all of the zombies back with them. And they're down a vehicle, right? Because they crashed the one car. They don't have any of the supplies that they went to go get from the police station. So that fucking sucks. And, you know, half of them don't trust the other half. And they're really, like, in so much worse states than they were at the beginning. Just like normal.
Ta-da.
Right. I don't know. It's a fairly anticlimactic volume, given some of the bigger stuff that happened, 12 issues ago? But I was also kind of warned that it was going to be like this for a while.
Yes.
And to not get complacent, which I am inclined to do. So thank you guys for the warning.
Mm-hmm.
But
now, be honest. You want to read volume 11.
Okay, here's how I feel, honestly. I wanted to read volume 10 sooner after volume 9 than I did. I am less interested in volume 11, but not because of what you might think.
Okay.
This volume didn't have the like emotional punch that the previous ones did. So it was almost a letdown.
Okay, but does every volume have to have a shootout at a prison and people dying left and right?
Oh, I mean, you have to have a lull. No.
because if that's what you want, you have become a monster.
No, that's not what I want at all. It's just that if the story doesn't progress fast enough, then I will get complacent. Then, like, I will actually have to work harder to remember what it is that... I don't know. I'm such a fucking hypocrite with this book. It's like, really
can stop there, because that's really all I wanted to get to. And I'm thankful that we did. And, you know, happy holidays to everyone else. Okay, see you guys.
Full circle, right?
Yep.
Okay, you're right. You're right, Aaron. You're right.
Thank you. See? We're all right.
Doesn't it make you feel good to have somebody tell you that, though?
It does.
Don't you wish that you could make me feel good more often by telling me that I am right?
No, because then you'll become complacent.
Full circle again.
Right. Look, I know you better than you know yourself. You just don't take the time to know me. That's really what we've come to in this episode.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But yep. Speaking of, there's a couple guys I want to get to know.
Right.
Should we talk to Adam and DJ?
We should, because they're all about being on Team Andrea. So I think that we should end this episode by just proving to our listeners that not everybody thinks that I'm a complete moron like Aaron Myers.
I don't think you're a complete moron. I think you are a wonderful, smart person who doesn't try very hard.
You are right. I have no follow-through whatsoever. So thanks for sharing that with the universe. I deserve that.
You're welcome. Well, happy holidays, everyone. I hope you enjoy this interview with Adam Nave and DJ Kirkbride.
I'm thankful for my friend Holly, whom I met through a small ad in the back of the Max 27. Despite us being 3,000 miles apart, I'm in the UK, she's in Canada, we remain friends to this day. I bet she's even more thankful for her husband, Marcus, who responded to the same ad, and their 3-year-old daughter. I'm thankful to know all of them. Comics are awesome, eh? Chris Walton, London, UK.
This week on The Couch, we welcome Eisner Award winners DJ Kirkbride and Adam P. Nave. Adam and DJ are currently writing Amelia Cole, published digitally by Monkey Brain Comics and in trade by IDW. Their new miniseries, Never Ending, is out this week from Dark Horse Comics. Thanks for making time for us, boys.
Thank you.
That was awesome.
I was waiting. Thank you very much for talking to us. Is anyone else lying down on a couch?
I was going to say, is this like a casting couch?
I'm not sure I would cast you, given the way that just unfolded.
It's whatever couch you feel most comfortable on. So if a casting couch is what you associate with, then we should talk about that and get into it. Or we could talk about comic books, whatever you guys want to talk about. It's wide open.
Let's start with comic books, and then we'll get into the creepy stuff.
Okay. Yeah, there's plenty of time. So Never Ending is out this week, and Amelia Cole is out this week, number 12.
Next week.
Oh, next week.
Number 4th.
All right. Which is, that's all fine and well, since we'll be talking about those both in a bit. But is there anything else you guys want to talk about that's coming up? Solo projects, new collaborations, anything else you want to talk about before we get into that?
Well, the first arc of Artful Daggers just ended like a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go get that on Comixology.
Yep.
And in a couple of months, actually, a trade from IDW will be out.
Wonderful.
And I had pizza, a little frozen pizza. I heated it up for lunch today.
Okay. Do you have plans for like dinner tomorrow or dinner tonight? Like, what's your food plans later on?
I'm hoping I'm going to have margaritas.
Uh-huh.
But as far as comics, no, I got nothing I can talk about.
Wait, margaritas for dinner?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we should probably talk about that at some point, too.
I call them dinneritas.
Well, I like this, though, because I had pizza snacks for lunch.
Boom. Look at us. We're so similar.
But just different enough to be a good collaboration.
Yep.
Yeah. It takes two wings to fly.
It's true.
But it takes 4 wings to be a bird on Krypton.
And it takes an X-wing to defeat the Empire. Sorry. Goodbye.
Wow.
I was going to say it takes 6 wings to have a meal at like Buffalo Wild Wings or something like that. But I like the extra reference.
Try 16.
Wow.
High five.
Okay. Shall we move on?
Yes, please.
How are we 3 minutes into this and I already need a break?
I'm so sorry.
I predicted it was going to be like this. I should have been like giggle training. Screw drink training. I just need to be able to talk without laughing. Okay, so let's talk about your writing process. That was a lovely segue, Aaron. This is actually the first time that we've had both halves of a partnership on the show at the same time. So that means you can't talk shit on each other, I think. But I actually know that there's not much of that that goes on anyway, or you're very good at hiding it, because you do seem really in sync about pretty much everything. How did that start, and how did you parlay a friendship into like a co-writership without losing the former?
Well, we met, I'd been working for Shannon Wheeler's Too Much Coffee magazine for like a couple issues, and DJ came on board, and we met like over email during the article pitch process. And I think we still debate over which version of this is correct, because I remember it being DJ coming to me, and he remembers it as me coming to him. Is that how we still break it down?
Let me tell you a true story. Let me tell you the truth.
Okay.
There's no way. I mean, I might have come to you and said, I liked your article. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because I thought it was like that you were like, you know, hey, I like this, like the idea. And I was like, cool, we should do something together.
Yes. Okay. That's how it had to have been. Because like I said, there's no way I asked to write with you because I'm a lone wolf.
Okay.
I'm a rebel.
Whereas I'm just needy.
And, no, you were welcoming and nice, and I was scared. Also, but no, it worked out. Okay, yeah. So I think this is a true story. Yeah, I probably said good job. You said let's write together, and I said oh let's try it. I've never done it before, and that was 20 years ago.
And
we're still writing together.
Actually, it really
just feels like it.
Well, no, it actually really was like over 10 years ago now.
No. It was like 8 years ago.
Really?
Or 9 tops.
Yeah. Probably not 10.
Anyway.
So, you know, we met doing that and tried, you know, writing this article together. Never saw print because the magazine folded before that issue came out. And we just kept in touch and were just friends. I mean, for years, you know, just emailing back and forth, hanging out.
When's the first time that you guys actually met? I asked this for a reason, actually, pertinent to Andrea and myself, because we have a podcasting partnership, but we've never actually met face to face.
Oh, well, Adam and I honestly haven't seen each other very often face to face. When was it that you came out to L.A., Adam? You came out for a meeting.
Yeah, I came out for a meeting. Good Lord, that had to have been, I want to say, like 2009.
So we'd known each other for about 5 years.
Yeah.
And we saw each other in person.
I think we'd already worked on comic stuff together by then, too.
We certainly done our websites together.
Yeah.
Did you shave in anticipation of meeting in person? That's a very important question.
Shave what?
Oh, touche.
No, but it was really funny.
Well, the reason I kind of find that fascinating is because, you know, we live in this digital age where we meet and make friends over the internet without ever having to make a physical, you know, a face-to-face connection. And I feel sometimes like that meeting can change your relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to. And obviously it either kept it the same or strengthened. That's what I'm curious about. You know, you guys have worked, you work together, you're friends, you collaborate, and then you meet. And sometimes meeting somebody, you know, face-to-face changes how you work together.
I don't know. I mean, I think, I know for me, I consider, like, Adam's one of my best friends, and I see him maybe once every year or two,
right?
Which is crazy, but I talk to by Adam. I mean, Adam and I talk a lot, but yeah, actually physically hanging out together in the same space, it's very rare. I was afraid when I first met him. Basically, I was like, yeah, you know, he came to LA. I'm like, yeah, I'll take you where you need to go. And because he's from New York and doesn't drive. And then I just proceeded to get us lost the whole time he was here.
Which,
like,
you know,
crazy lost.
Yeah, but who cared? I mean, I didn't really give a shit. I do remember, though, that we were like, oh, we have some time to kill. Let's go to the Starbucks. And you're like, yeah, it's like 3 blocks this way. I'm like, okay, and start walking. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, just take that. What are you doing? And I made you walk to the Starbucks.
Walking. Yeah, we don't walk in L.A.
But yeah,
nobody walks in L.A.
I'm actually trying to actively think now, like, in terms of working in comics, I mean, neither one of us met Nick physically until after the first trade was out.
Hmm. Yeah, we met Nick at this past Baltimore Comic-Con. Yeah. The first time we met him in person.
Yeah, like, I met him, like, 2 days before you did, you know, type of thing, because he was in New York.
Mm-hmm. So they bonded really quick, and I'm the outsider.
No.
Well, okay, so Adam, that actually, I mean, this is kind of taking a little bit of a turn, but it's still pertinent. Like, you seem to pick people you collaborate with kind of a lot off of the internet, not necessarily face to, you know, people you've met.
Well, I mean, okay, up until recently, and it actually hasn't changed that much, but when I was living in New York, see, I just moved to Portland, and I spent about a decade, you know, writing-wise, working, you know, and leaving the house at, like, you know, 7:38, and getting home at, like, 6, and working till, like, 8, and having dinner, and then going back to work. When am I supposed to go hang out with people?
Right. No, it's totally valid.
It's partially necessity, but it's also just the people I wanted to work with who, you know, just didn't happen to be in the same place.
Yeah. And I guess the internet gives you exposure to them, but, like, how do you choose, like, Nick, then, to work on Amelia Cole?
Have you seen his art?
Well, okay. Right, but you still have to collaborate with somebody. You know, there still has to be a good relationship there, too.
Well, with Nick, a friend of mine named Tim Simmons, I was working on a webcomic he was writing. I was helping edit it, called Spy 16. And he knew that Adam and I were always looking for collaborators. And he had come across Nick's art and I think chatted with him a little bit. And then said, hey, I think you'd really like this guy's stuff. So we found it. We liked his work. And it was pretty quick, though, just like via email and talking about what kind of books we liked and what kind of book we wanted to do. And just Nick's just a really nice guy. And it came across very quickly via email that we had a rapport and all got along.
And there was some Skype in there, I think. Some like essentially phone conversations.
Yeah. And then we heard his accent. We're like, this accent's awesome. Everything he says sounds cool. He calls us lads, so it was fun. Yeah. So, but we did get to know him a little bit. But the collaboration actually has been pretty magical. Like, honestly, we were really lucky. I think we all get along really well, and like, I like to make the same kind of comics, and are all on kind of like the same mission with Amelia, which is I think it's a rare thing.
Yeah,
we're lucky.
Yeah. I'm what did you call me, DJ? A co-writing slut.
Yeah, he's a co-writing slut. He cheats on me all the time.
It's true.
Cheats on me all the time too. It's fine.
Right. It's how it goes. No, I like co-writing comics. You know, I can't do it with prose, but I love co-writing comics with people. And, you know, obviously there's artists involved, and, you know, most of the people aren't people who are in my vicinity. And I don't think I've ever had, like, a meeting with a collaborator that I've worked with, you know, you meet for the first time, that's gone horribly wrong.
Nice.
Because if they're people that you work with and you talk to a lot, generally, if they're, like, completely psychotic and you need to stay away, you'll know by then.
True.
Okay, that makes me feel a little better.
Mm-hmm. Just, yeah. Dude, please, please shave your beard. Please.
Never. Let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
So, Neverending seems like it has some obvious roots for your shared love of Superman. Can you talk about how this newest project kind of came about?
Well, I mean, it does have roots in Superman. And that, I mean, I know Adam loves Superman, you know, but he's my favorite, not just comic book character, but favorite anything ever. You know, like, uh-huh. Superman's just my favorite, my everything. Don't worry about it. But it keeps me, liking Superman keeps me on the straight and narrow, you know, so it's all good. Don't worry about it.
I'm just wondering what the elves in the background are doing.
Oh, okay, that's the, you hear that. Yeah, that's the ice cream truck.
Oh,
there's
okay.
There's so many sounds in my neighborhood, and that's just one of them.
It gives it a very, one, like, haunting, kind of creepy vibe,
yeah.
Especially talking about Superman.
Superman is your everything.
Right.
No, there's nothing kinda about it. It is creepy, and it keeps going on the same part over and over again of It's a Small World.
This is terrifying. This is some sort of nightmare scenario.
It really is. Anyway, what was happening? Oh, yeah, Neverending. I do like Superman, obviously. But actually, its actual roots were just in, I think, me ruminating about, as I do, about death and how scary it is.
As the ice cream truck circles around your house.
Yeah, and you should see this ice cream truck, too. I walked by it once, and there were parents bringing their kids out. I'm like, no!
Yeah, it made you think about death.
That's like leaving. It feels bad. I know. Yeah, I was thinking about that. Yeah, death. And as a kid, I grew up. I went to Sunday school a lot and everything. And talking about, I don't know. I don't mean to offend anybody. But talking about, like, you know, going to heaven and going to hell scared me, but going to heaven scared me too. Hmm. You know, I don't think that's completely I think other people felt that way. Just the idea of it never ending, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Like the title. So yeah, death scared me and immortality scared me. And then I think, and I'm really doing some therapy on myself here, usually when things scare me, you know, as a kid, Superman made me feel better. What? Sorry, I just, that's where Neverending came from. Thinking about stuff that scared me, thought about Superman, then put Superman in this position to have to deal with stuff that scared me.
But as you grew up, like, I find, I love Superman too, but in different kind of ways, I think, than people that get kind of emotionally bonded to Superman as an, you know, early on. Like, that wasn't the case with me, but I find the philosophical kind of ramifications of Superman and an alien on Earth with godlike powers having to still be good has a lot of depth.
But here's the thing, and it's telling to me the way you phrase that.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't have to do good.
Right, but he chooses to do good.
He doesn't see it as a choice. It's not a he has to as a character. It's just he knows good from bad and does good. It's not, well, maybe I'll just let this thing go, but no, I should do good, or this is the right thing. It's not a question. Because what a lot of people seem to miss, especially these days, is that Superman is an aspirational figure, not an inspirational figure.
Okay.
And it's a critical difference in the types of stories you tell with him. And for me, I've always felt that way about Superman and also Doctor Who.
Sure. Okay.
Which I think at you know, when he's being done right, again, is an aspirational figure of that, you know, that character that never gives in and never gives up. And at the end of the day, that's rewarded. And wouldn't the world be a better place if it actually, you know, if more of us believed that, it could actually work that way.
But isn't it also very telling, too, that he is this character, but he's not human?
I mean, growing up in New York, no.
Okay.
I think that is part of it, is that a lot of that is the New York thing. It's the American-ness of it, that we're, everyone in America is essentially the other. None of us really, I mean, well, not none of us started here, but, you know, it's like white Europeans certainly didn't.
Right,
right.
And, you know, we've been kind of flooding the country ever since we started it. And that's really where it is. It's not that he's an alien in the sense of, you know, he comes from another planet. I mean, yeah, he is. But it's more that he's an alien in that the culture he is in is not necessarily the culture he is from, both in terms of being from Krypton and, frankly, being in Metropolis from Kansas.
Yeah, okay. You're right. There's multiple layers there. I can agree with that. So is that, so in this new story, what aspects are you guys trying to explore?
Well, honestly, I mean, the thing about Chuck Baxter is the main character in Neverending, and one of the, right off the bat, huge differences between him and Superman is that he's not an alien. He's from Earth and you know, grows up a normal guy for the first 25 years of his life. And he's one of those characters, like, you know, who has an, like, you know, something beyond his control happens and he gets these powers. So, yeah, I mean, his powers are similar to Superman. He's a nice guy like Superman. But that's, I mean, that's kind of, that's where the parallels end. I mean, Chuck is not necessarily, I don't know, maybe Adam would disagree. I don't think he's an aspirational character.
Well, he has a choice. He very specifically makes a choice.
Yeah, right. And that's the thing that adds, like, there's more difficulty for Chuck, I think, in dealing with these things. And, yeah, so he's just very human. I mean, he's a human who happens to have superpowers. And he's not, like, we're not making him human as in he's angsty and, you know, grits his teeth and, you know, walks against the wind in the rain. You know, it's not like that type of grim and gritty human, but he's a human and he gets these powers, and at first they're awesome until he realizes there's one power he didn't know he had and wouldn't have known he had, you know, until time passes. And it's kind of how he deals with that. But the basic, like the flight and strength and everything, those are just cool superhero comic book tropes that it's fun to explore. And it's fun to see Robert Love draw.
Yeah.
You know, it's just in context of the story, but that's not the main gist of the story or the character.
Right. This is not a Superman allegory at all.
Okay.
And, you know, people will shorthand it because, look, it's a guy who could fly and he's strong and he has a cape.
Right. But I think it's important to lay out for people that it's not a Superman story in that case, too.
Yeah. No, definitely not. I think going for that is just reductionist. It's not at all a Superman story. It's the story of a guy. And it's a very human story about, you know, as DJ has been saying, it about dealing with death, dealing with the passage of time,
yeah,
and dealing with your own fears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, while trying to do the right, I mean, he's a good guy. You know, he definitely tries to do the right thing, but yeah, he's not Superman. Although his origins, of course, were, you know, deep down, like a lot of, like most superhero comics in some way, of course, they're inspired by kind of the original, you know, big one,
yeah,
which mm-hmm. is Superman, of course.
No, but I like the analogy of taking some of that and, I guess, sort of humanizing it and exploring the fact that it doesn't, you can't stop it. Like, you can't just shut off, in this case, the one power that he didn't realize that he even had. There's no way to stop it. And that is a very human fear that I think is pretty interesting to see how you guys play around with that.
No, you're right, because it's true. He can't, you know, he can choose to not fly around and,
right.
and, you know, fight bad guys, but he can't choose to age. So he's just stuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it is. It's about how he deals with that. And, yeah.
Well, I want to push you guys a little bit on a couple of other things that pop up in Amelia Cole and Neverending specifically, just to get you out of your comfort zone even more. I think in both mm-hmm. cases, you've made deliberate choices to feature diverse families. You've got Mike and George in Amelia and Chuck and Ellie in Neverending that are less frequently shown in comics, but you don't make a big deal about it. It's just obviously important to both of you to have made that choice.
I don't even know that it's a conscious choice. It's more, you know, when you're writing, part of what you want to do is make sure that it's relatable. You know, you're telling a story, you want to make sure people feel something, they can relate to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And when you're building worlds, they, again, should be relatable.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk out in the street, you don't just see a whole lot of white people.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
You know, a whole lot of just straight white people, unless you're in, like...
Portland.
Well, okay, yeah, Portland is very white, it's disturbing me. actually, not out where I live. Yeah, it's just, this is the world that we both see outside of our window and always have, you know? I mean, there are people of different races, different sexualities, different genders, and they're still people. There's, you know, and there's no call, I think, to a certain degree, to call too much attention to it, because that's not our story.
Right, right.
You know, if it was our story, we would, but...
I appreciate the fact that it's not, there's no hammer involved when you're laying it out. It's just part of the story, but I do think that it's not as common in the storytelling in a lot of other books. That's all.
No, you're correct.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say, and also we're not, and I'm glad you noticed and appreciate it, because it's something that we want to just be, it's just matter of fact, and that's how mm-hmm. it should be. Attention, unless it is part of the story. I mean, there are stories where, you know, certain, like, race could be an issue or you know, part of it, or catalyst or sexual orientation or anything, but the stories we're telling, they're not, and these are just characters in these worlds, and, you know, and these are the stories. I mean, the interesting thing about Neverending is that we didn't mention Chuck's race when we first created him, you know, and then Robert drew him, I think initially as a white guy with blonde hair, and we asked to make it
right.
to make the hair brown. But you know, and then we decided to have Ellie be black. And again, it's still not like the biggest part. It's not a huge part of the story at all. Although there is a mention, mainly because of the time frame when they first get together. Mm-hmm. But and same with Mike and George. Like, they're, you know, Amelia's friends, and it's just there, and it's fine. I think.
Oh, yeah, sorry, DJ. No, I just remind me when you're done. I need to call out one Mike and George moment. But sorry, you were saying.
Oh, well, it's just so easily knocked off my train of thought.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, there's a shiny thing. I just wanted to be, and I know Adam does too, and our collaborators have too, and it's great. It's just, you know, it's just matter of fact, and I think that's how it should be, and I think it's great. You know, to be presented, you know, to readers as just matter of fact, especially younger readers, and just be like, hey, uh-huh. like Mike and George are her buddies, and, you know, and then you can pick up on it if you want, you know, and that's fine, that's great, and it's not even that it's not a big deal. The important thing is for it just to not be a deal at all.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. And as comics reflect society more and more, it becomes less and less of a big deal, and then it finds its way into mainstream comics, I think, too.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully, right? That's the idea without having it to be an idea. But it's a it's a weird line to pull, where it's like you're not trying to be conscious of showing diversity, because then you're being conscious of, you know, showing diversity. So it seems like a double-edged sword to me.
Yeah, it can be. It's kind of the trick of walking without walking.
Right, right.
What were you going to say, Adam?
Oh, right. Nick, this was not in the script, and it's one of my favorite things that Nick did, just a little character bit. In, I cannot remember what issue, I want to say 3, it might be 4, of Amelia Cole. They're out, and Amelia's shopping, and you see Mike and George are with her, and they're shopping, and one of them picks up a sweater, and kind of looks at it, and then buys it for the other one. And up until that point, we hadn't really mentioned that they're in a relationship. I don't think we've ever come out and just flat out said that they are. But Nick just put it right there on the page.
Mm.
And it's a subtle little bit of business where it's just like, see, they're buying each other clothes. Because, you know, you do that sometimes when you're really like, oh, the sweater would look great on you, and just buy it.
Right.
And no, it's very such subtle. A pretty and subtle little bit.
We've talked about this before, and I think it's admirable how subtle it is, because you're right, it can be read at a couple of different levels. I'll stop pointing it out when it's less of a thing to point out, I guess.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The fact is, it still is. And so on the one hand, I'm giving you props for it. And on the other hand, I also am just sort of curious about the motive, which I'm not implying is nefarious in any way. It's just... It's clearly important to you guys to reflect what you see outside and the kind of world that you want to see outside. And I think that that's great that finds its way into your writing as well.
Yeah, and just in little ways, like, because Amelia is also just not a book about relationships in that way. You know what I mean? Like, Amelia is an adventure book, so it's not going to take front and center. But yeah.
But it's there, and, you know, if kids, you know, kids read it and they're not looking for the relationship, you know, or if they notice it, that's fine, too. It's nothing that should be called out, and it's one of those things, I'm in the same camp, it's like you call it out because it's so rare, and whenever you do, you kind of feel bad for having to call it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to be at a place where we need to, and yet we still do need to.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, along that same line, you both talk about the importance of all ages content in the industry. Like, have you ever regretted making Amelia Cole an all ages story? Or have you ever had to tone down a storyline because it was headed in a direction that was kind of less inclusive?
We've had to tone down. There have been little, you know, when we're scripting, obviously, you know, we edit stuff and tweak things. There's been the occasional, like, should we use that word? Can we use that word? Do we want to step back?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was like one visual where we, you know, occasionally we'll step back and be like, we scripted this to be kind of brutal and, you know, make sure, like, you know, just nudge Nick and be like, remember, we can't show it that way.
Yeah.
And Nick, of course, is just gorgeous at doing that.
Yeah, he seems to be able to find that line where it's not, it doesn't cross, but it still conveys.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, there was the mutant massacre over at Marvel was an all ages thing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that is something that I forget, honestly, when we're writing Amelia. And sometimes I think I'm too sensitive to these things. And then, like, I know kids who watch Walking Dead and seem fine. I'm just like, what? I can't watch that. So,
you and me so, both, my friend.
Yeah, don't bring up
I know,
Walking Dead.
Right.
Don't,
I'm sorry. I know. I forgot. but no, I mean, so it is kind of a fine line sometimes, because it's always, we don't want this to be looked at as a kid's book. I don't think Nick's art is kind of kid's book style art, but it is all ages, and you have to watch that. I mean, it's even like, I love Doctor Who, and I was watching the 50th anniversary, and there's and throughout the whole series, there's some really dark, heavy subject matter in this show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still all ages, and kids can deal with that. And so it is fun finding the fine line between, you know, how, if we go too far or not. And so far, I don't think we have. I mean, actually, Andrea, sometimes I feel like I look to you. Like, if we go too far, you'll say something.
Yeah.
Well, I actually asked you at Emerald City. Like, have we? Is this too much?
We talked about, because Hidden War was a different tone. It shifted from the, like, exploring new world feel to now rolling up your sleeves and getting your hands dirty. And I don't have a problem with that as a parent, because Amelia is the like catalyst for that change. So it's very true to her, and she is the character that I'm exposing, like, my kid to. So,
well,
so far so good.
Can I throw out a weird one?
Yeah.
No.
No, never
yes.
mind.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, the Harry Potter books are supposed to be all ages, right?
Yeah, I have
but
mixed
they
feelings
were written,
about that.
Well, but they were written to grow up with the initial readers.
Sure.
So, you know, book seven, not nearly as much of a kid's book as book one.
Right.
Absolutely.
But now, after the fact, you know, because originally it's like kids would read this one and then they'd have to wait a year and they would actually grow up with the books.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd always find them at the same level. But now you have kids who are the right age for one, but not the right age for seven. And do you hold them back?
Yes, I did.
I'm just, you know, well, okay. I've always been curious. Like, how do you deal with that? And I think partially it's, you know, because Amelia is a coming of age story in a lot of ways, that the storyline does kind of grow up and intensify in certain ways with her.
And I think that's perfectly fair. Like, I think that's the job of the parent to stagger the reading material or the entertainment material to be age appropriate. It's not the, it isn't necessarily the job of the creator to stunt the growth of the character.
Right.
You know, because kids are going to read or people are going to read it at all different times. So, you know, that's an interesting way of looking at it. And I think we get a very myopic view of what's all ages, you know, as opposed to right. An evolution of a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to have, you know, like, dismemberments flying around.
Well, good, because that's where I draw the line, personally.
Yeah, I mean, it should always be, you know, like, again, like the old 80s Marvel stuff, like, what all ages used to mean.
Right.
But I think the key is never talking down.
Yeah, absolutely, because that's the difference between it being for kids and being something that I can read with my kid and talk to him about it. And so far, I really think that's a relatively unique thing about Amelia Cole. I mean, honestly, that's why we keep talking about it, because it's just not, it's not as common in the industry as I wish that it was. I think I have a suspicion that it's fairly difficult to do. It's something that you have to be aware of as you're writing and obviously drawing, and both of the anecdotes that you told about your process and about Nick's process speak to that. You have to be conscious of it all the time. And it takes a commitment to the end goal of it being as inclusive and relatable as possible that I just don't necessarily see happening with a lot of the big two titles. And that's a barrier in terms of getting younger readers involved in comics. But you know, whatever. Well, you guys are fighting the good fight.
I think you need to be conscious of tone, no matter what tone you're writing, though. I mean, I don't think we work harder to make it this tone than we would if we were writing it, say, for Vertigo. But if we were writing for Vertigo, we'd have a different set of tone, you know, tonality rules in mind.
Fair enough.
Tonality rules is a completely bullshit phrase. And forgive me for that.
I loved the first movie, Tonality Rules, though it wasn't as good.
Yeah, well, Winona Ryder didn't show up.
No.
but no, I mean, we'd have a different set of rules for how you make this work, and we'd abide by those.
Right.
And have to keep an eye on them, because, you know, you don't want to be writing this Vertigo, so you don't want to be writing The Walking Dead and suddenly have an issue with unicorns and ponies.
Oh, I'd read that issue.
Love that.
Actually, I would read the hell out of that issue.
Yeah, that'd be absolutely bold.
But yeah, I think it's your job as a creator to, you know, set a tone for your story and, you know, change it within the story when the story calls for it, but, you know, keep an eye on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I think the character driven change is the way to go. Speaking of Amelia and what's going on with her these days, it seems like we're heading to some big showdowns with Hidden War and with what's going on with Omega Company and with Amelia back in the city. Is there anything in that regard that you can give us a little hint about with the next issue hitting next week?
Ooh. Oh yeah, Adam, what should we say about the next issue?
We can say that, you know, as a bit of a surprise, and we can actually talk about partially why this happened, but Hidden War actually ends with issue 12, and issue 13 will start a new arc.
Can I say what it's called?
You can.
All right, you guys ready for this?
Yes.
Sorry. No, it's called Amelia Cole and the Enemy Unleashed.
Oh, wow.
So let me say it again. Amelia Cole and the Enemy Unleashed.
Whoa.
So we are definitely increasing intensity here.
It's a high level of intensity.
Yeah.
Can we get Amelia and Hector back together?
Maybe. Maybe not. What's it worth to you?
Well, that was really the only tease that I was hoping to hear, but I'm assuming that I'm not going to get that today.
No, I don't want to spoil anything. I know Adam doesn't either. I mean, the main announcement is, that the next storyline will be called Amelia Cole and the Enemy Unleashed. But it does – I mean, it is an ongoing series, you know, so we're continuing. – yeah, anything's possible. We're continuing things. I mean, we have planned up to issue – what issue do we have planned up to? 30. Like, we have a pretty straight up plotted through issue 30 now.
So 12 is out next week, and then how long do we have to wait for 13?
2 months, I think.
And we have a little bit of a break, like a holiday break and everything. Sure. And let Nick recharge his batteries a little bit.
Yeah.
And because we, as Reese, our flatter, points out, we write a lot of things that involve rubble. Uh-huh. And so that's tough for him and Nick. That's tough on those two. He's always like, please, no rubble. And we're like, oh, well, here's a page of rubble. The next storyline is going to be called Amelia Cole and the Infinite Rubble.
I have threatened him with writing an all rubble issue.
Yeah.
Amelia Cole and the Wasteland of Broken Bricks.
Yeah. So,
oh, my gosh.
That's beautiful.
You can use that if you want.
Can we?
Okay. Are you writing that down?
We have it on record.
So, DJ, what do you do when you're not making comics? Like, what do you do to unwind?
Oh, I don't know. Nothing. I mean, making comics is kind of what I do to unwind. I mean, that's so weird. Until recently had a day job, you know, and then do comics after that. And now that I'm doing comics all day long, it actually, like, I have this weird thing where I have to be reminded that I'm working, you know, like I'll feel like I'm super lazy. I didn't do anything today. Like, what am I doing? And it's like, no, I, you know, went over the number or the never ending issue 3 lettering pass and did a pass on Amelia Cole 19. You know what I mean? Like I'm working, but it's just the stuff I did for fun. So it doesn't feel like work. Or like I went to Long Beach Comic Con this weekend, and I felt like I was just hanging out and having fun, you know, and forgetting that, oh, yeah, no, I'm working. This is my job.
That's good, right?
Yeah.
It is. Now I need to find something else to do to have fun.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should get a real job.
Yeah, there you go. Just go relax in a cubicle.
Right. Oh, dude, you could drive the ice cream truck.
No.
You're not scary enough.
I drive it, but I have a nice one and like play like the Superman theme or something. Mm. And the Doctor Who theme. Yeah, okay, hold on. Maybe I will get an ice cream truck.
Yeah. I hear food trucks are kind of a thing now.
They're huge, yeah. I mean, I just read a lot and watch a lot of TV, hang out with my friends, hang out with my betrothed. We should have fun, eat a lot of food. Yeah, I don't know.
Sounds like a pretty good life.
It's a great life.
Well, speaking of food trucks, Adam, how's Portland treating you? Well,
it's pretty good. Everything here closes freakishly early.
That's funny to say that, because it's like I live down in Eugene, and it's like Portland to us is like, oh, Portland's a big city.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up and spent the first, like, almost 4 decades of my life in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, some stops and various other places, but you know, here's I went down to the comic book thing, I can't remember what it's called now, Comics Underground. Yeah, and we get downtown and it's like there's that bar where it is and like two other bars and nothing else is open. It's 7:30.
Yeah,
like on a weeknight. I'm just like, what do you people do when you need, like, you know, something to do at 3 a.m? Like,
well, they all go home and they make comics.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. So, well, is this a hard adjustment? Like, how has you been there for 2 months now?
About a month.
Okay. So, is this a crazy adjustment? Like, you know, New York is a very different environment than basically anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
In the world,
right. But, and is there any unexpected outcomes from forcing the scenery change this way?
Oh, there are hundreds. I kept my day job. I just work remotely.
Mm-hmm.
And now for local time, I work from like 8 till 2. And of course, you know, I spent 13 years at that job before I moved. And so it's like, you know, you get up, you have your commute, you get on the train. Now it's like get up and I walk 5 feet to my office. Mm-hmm. You know, turn on the computer. So there's a huge adjustment just in terms of how my day goes, because at 2 o'clock, I'm now technically done. And, you know, I can go focus on writing and all that. And so it's just a bunch of hours I haven't quite refilled with work.
Mm-hmm.
I have to actually restart working on a novel, which will do that job for me quite nicely.
So do you find that your creative process has changed at all?
Oh, it changes every time I change essentially where my desk sits. it quietly changes my process. In just ways I don't know. Like, in this place, the way the place is set up and the doors are weirdly thin, so I only listen to music on headphones. Which doesn't sound like that big a change, but it is. Because it's like, if I want the music, I can't, I pace. And so I get stuck on a thought, and I can't hear the music anymore if I need to pace.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. No, I can see that being a huge pain in the ass to get used to. Not something that would be an obvious thing to throw you off, but just a like a minor inconvenience that then could be a sticking point for getting like readjusted.
Right. I mean, it's also just little things, like, and as stupid as this sounds, like, I have a different chair and a different keyboard tray. Which just means I'm sitting in a slightly different way, and, you know, my arms are slightly in a different position. And, you know, you spend years just with this automatic, I sit down and my hands go here and I just start working. And it's all slightly off. Just enough that I notice it.
It's like the princess and the pea.
It is.
It is.
Can we just start calling him princess?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a tiara somewhere. I don't know if it moved with me.
And Portland's the pea.
DJ, what was your first comic as a kid? And besides Superman, who is your favorite character?
I'll say I got into Superman from the movies first, Christopher Reeve movies. And that's what got me into comics. Yeah, because I was born in 77. So, I mean, the movie, you know, the first movie came in, that's what I grew up with. And that got me into comics. And then it turned out my dad collected comics. And, I forget the issue number. The first comic I remember reading was, it was a Spider-Man that I think Peter David wrote. I could be wrong.
Gene DeWolf thing?
I don't know. I honestly can't remember. I think the cover, maybe I'm mixing it up. The cover has Spider-Man, I think, on top of a bus or something. I could be misremembering. I do remember finishing reading it and telling my mom I was done, and she was so proud of me. And I was like, all right, so all this comic stuff is, I mean, it's partly my dad's fault, but mostly my mom's fault. Because she's like, yay, awesome. Good job. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going to do a good job. I'll keep reading them.
Can I
like,
just say, I love your years. Mom, DJ.
No, she's all, yes.
No, DJ's mom is so awesome. Like, on Facebook, anytime, it's like, you know, here's this interview we did. And she's just like, that's so awesome. And I'm just like, man, I wish I liked my parents.
My mom's very supportive. My mom all my parents are very supportive. And, so that, there's a Spider-Man issue. I think... growing up, I like the superpowers line. So I like Superman and Batman and Flash and Super Friends and all that stuff. But yeah, I was a huge Spider-Man fan, and my dad loved Thor and Daredevil, so I got into those a lot. And then once I hit like 11 and 12, it was like all X-Men for years. You know, I basically got like the end of Claremont's X-Men run.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I just got hooked on those. Those were the first comics where I didn't want to miss an issue. Before that, it was all like, I'll pick up an issue wherever, you know? So I have like a really weird collection of like issue 230, then issue 245, and I didn't care. But with X-Men, it's like I needed to have it all in a row.
Nice.
I still didn't understand it. But I loved it.
Adam, what about you? What's the earliest memory? And on top of that, what's the one that made you realize, this is awesome, I want more, I want comics one way or another?
Well, the earliest memory, my father read comics before I was born and then stopped. But he kept all of his. So I remember finding, like, his old Lee and Kirby, like, X-Men and Fantastic Four and, like, the Starenko, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point I was just like, you know, I like comics, I want to read more comics. And so he, like, took me to a comic store and I got, like, an issue of X-Men. And it was, like, the second part of them fighting Dracula.
Uh-huh.
And so it's like, A, my X-Men were, you know, the original.
Yeah.
So I was like, who the fuck are these clowns? And why are they fighting a vampire? Like, just get the hell out of town. And I actually grew to love it after that. But
that wouldn't be the last time, either. They fought, fought Dracula.
No, I know. It's, you know, and never better than in Captain Britain and M13. Still the best use of Dracula in the Marvel Universe, that storyline. But yeah, no, so I started comics kind of weirdly, like, before my time, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first time I was just like, comics are awesome, I need more comics, was growing up, because, you know, I had, my father wrote, and my mother worked all day and was an editor. So there was always a parent awake, mm-hmm. but usually only one, which is great, again, when you're a kid. You wake up 3 a.m. and you're sick, and there's a parent you can go bug.
Right. There's always a parental figure to go running to.
Right, which was, you know, kind of awesome. But for a number of years, there was this diner across the street where we would go a bunch because, you know, who in New York cooks outside of apparently me? And we would go there so much, like, I could wander in myself with no money. And they all knew me. And, like, I could sit down and, you know, like, have a, like, whatever, grab, like, a sandwich and then go out. And I would often, like, get some comics and, like, go to the diner and read some comics.
That's cute. Little Adam reading comics.
Yeah, totally. Like, do you remember those old like, paperback editions of, like, the DC used to do that were, like, the size of the Archie Digests?
Oh, those are awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I got one of those, and it was, like, a Superboy one, and it had some Legion stories in it. And I think it was the one where they're fighting a robot, and it turns out to be sent by Lex Luthor to the future to destroy Superboy, which is way too complex. This is why Luthor loses all the time. And it was like, they figured it out because, like, the robot's name was, like, Uxlore or something like this. And I was classic. Like, read that, and I'm just like, I just fell in love so hard with the Legion of Superheroes. It's just like, I need to get more of these. And bought, like, every little digest, because I thought that's the only way they came. You know, the Legion stuff, I'd only ever seen it that way. So I bought, like, everyone I could find. And then, weirdly, I found an issue of Atari Force.
Oh, really? That was
That was the one.
That's your gateway comic?
That was, like, my gateway to sticking in comics. Like, I suddenly needed to find all the issues. Like, up until then, it was like, I'd read a comic, you know, I like comics, and I'd read them, and, you know, they were around all the time. But, like, Atari Force was the first, I was just like, I need this right now.
I think that is perfectly fine. Like, I could definitely see that happening.
It was fun book.
I mean, for me, it was probably like Youngblood or something like that, you know, like Image first wave stuff. So you never know what it's going to be.
Right. And in a certain way, it doesn't matter what it is. You know, like, it could be the worst comic in the world when you look back, but it's the thing that hooked you. So who cares?
Mm-hmm.
We're still judging, though. It's okay.
I'm not. I think I have every issue of Atari Force.
You are not an objective audience.
No, but I'm a sympathetic audience.
Fine.
I want to read.
So we have a very short amount of time, but I want to ask this question. Sorry,
we're gonna run out of Skype tape.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So Adam, you are a notorious music fiend.
Yes.
I let you pick the music this week, and you did a really good job. Do you want to tell us about the two that you picked?
If I could remember what they were, totally.
One of them was Flogging Molly.
Oh, right. If I Ever Leave This World Alive, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
That had to have been it.
And then the other one I was totally unfamiliar with, but one second.
Yoko Kanno, Knock a Little Harder.
If you say so. Do you need me to confirm that?
No.
Okay.
Can you sing it for us, Adam?
I cannot.
Okay. Well, luckily, the link will be up on the site, and it will have preceded or follow this interview. So, you know, I'm doing that for you. But tell us about them.
Well, If I Ever Leave This World Alive is actually a song of friendship. It is that view of just, you know, life is nuts and we're all busy and insane. And none of us actually will get out of it alive. But, you know, we can still be there for each other. And at least understand when we can't.
That's very sweet.
It is. Actually, one of my great joys, it's always been one of my favorite Flogging Molly songs. And I spent, I think, 7 years now. Seeing them live at least once a year, because they always stop by New York. And I don't know if they're going to stop by Portland this year, and it's stressing me out. But one of the great things is that, you know, the audience participation at a Flogging Molly show is off the charts. Everyone just belts out all the songs. But that song in particular, usually, they'll just ease off, and we get to sing it to them, which is just it's a very special little thing. It's a bonding experience.
Yeah. What about the other one?
The other one is just, I don't know, it's a cool song. No, it really is just one of those, and I've been one of these people, and I think we all have at some point, whether it's when we're teenagers or later on, where you shut out the world because you're just convinced, like, no one's ever going to understand what you're feeling, no one's going to understand any of this, so you shut out the world. And if you're lucky, at a certain point, you realize how horribly wrong you were, and you fight yourself to enable the ability to engage the world again. But recognizing that it is a fight, and it's a fight you need to have with yourself, is not just a switch that gets to be thrown.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's very kind of Amelia Cole in that sense.
I can see that.
Good choices.
Thank you.
Well, guys, I hate to say this, but we're almost out of Skype tape. So I wanted to really thank you for joining us.
I think we lost DJ, by the way. Oh, there he is.
I'm back. I'm back. I was so scared.
Were you cold and alone in the darkness?
What were you talking about?
With only the sound of the ice cream truck to keep you company.
And a soft little beep, boop, beep.
Now that we have everyone back together, any last words for the good of the order?
I'll say buy go to comic shops. Yeah, buy comics. Buy Neverending. Buy Neverending. Your local comic shop issue 1 is out November 27th. It might have already been out when this comes out, but it'll still be out when this podcast comes out. And Amelia Cole on Comixology, and also Believe in Your Dreams.
There you go.
Oh, you guys got so sentimental here at the end. You can pre-order Amelia Cole on Comixology and
subscribe to Amelia Cole on Comixology.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Neverending, you can get that through your local comic shop, and you all know by now how important that is to keep your favorite books going, so don't be complacent. Aaron cannot single-handedly keep every comic in print for you all.
Although he's trying.
I tried. Yeah.
Appreciate the effort.
Thanks, guys.
You're a hero, Aaron. Don't let Andrea tell you different.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Comics Therapy. Visit the website, comicstherapy.com, for everything you need to know and more, including links to the comics and music mentioned in the interview. We'll see you next week, and happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Woo!
Yay.
I am thankful for the Max, Maximize number 1 this week, an early Black Friday deal from my LCS owner giving me the whole set of Sin City Trade for 40% off. Finding Powers at my local library and seeing my former Read Comic Book comrades have a successful show. Happy Thanksgiving, Patrick.
Let me tell you some, I've tried, but I slammed the door so tight that they could never get in. Kept my cool on the lock and key, and I never shed a tear, now the sign of my condition. Fear of love, a bit of vanity, it kept me on the run, the main events of my confession. Kept my chin upon